Welcome to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. This is your host, Amos Medford, and today is the kickoff of the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention. And I am not in Nashville for the convention, unfortunately. That would be awesome. But we have the next best thing. I am joined on the podcast by Mr. Mark Hatfield, the National Director of Conservation Services for the NWTF. So I am super happy that Mark was able to join me and super happy to give y'all this conversation. You can hear what he has to say about hunting wild turkeys and the health of the current population in the United States. And it's very informative. And Mark is a super nice guy and really appreciate him taking out a few minutes. I mean, literally while they're getting ready for the convention and getting everything kicked off, and he's running all kind of things and keeping all kind of things going, and he took a few minutes out to talk on with me. So man, I really appreciate Mark doing that. Enjoyed it. Hope you guys enjoy the conversation with Mark Hatfield, the National Director of Conservation Services for the NWTF. Let's jump into it. Thanks for tuning in today. Welcome to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. We're happy to be joined today by Mark Hatfield of the NWTF. And Mark is in Nashville getting ready for the NWTF convention. So, Mark, I appreciate you taking some time to join me today.
Yeah, no, man, I'm glad to be here. We are really just literally unloading trucks right now. So there's a lot of things going on, all of our staff together. So it's just everybody's excited to be back in Nashville.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, if I can get you off of box carrying duty for a couple minutes, I'll do what I can.
Yeah, no, that sounds good to me.
Awesome. Well, you're the Director of Conservation. Is that the right title for you?
Yeah, so many hats. So my official title is the National Director of Conservation Services. And so I work within the management team or the executive staff, or Becky Humphreys, our CEO. And represent the conservation department at that seat, at that table. And then I help with the kind of strategic direction of the conservation department, and also work hand in hand with Mandy Harling, which is our National Director of Outreach and Education, our R3, or Hunter Retention Recruitment Reactivation Programs, and then Tom Speezy, which is our National Director of Field Conservation. So kind of a three-headed monster there, but I've been with the organization now for 18 years. And so it's been a kind of a great career so far, and looking for to do even more.
That's awesome. And that's pretty cool. Sounds like you got a couple of things, you know, going on. So I'm sure you're a busy man, but I appreciate you taking time to join us today. And I kind of want to rewind a little bit and just jump back to, you know, how did you get into turkey hunting? And then, you know, obviously that's turned into, like you said, a, you know, great career with NWTF, but kind of how did that all evolve when, you know, from the first time maybe that you went hunting, you know, bringing it up to kind of more current where you are now?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it's probably not too far off from a lot of people, you know, kind of why we were, you know, pursued a job or a career in wildlife biology. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in Central Kentucky. Grew up kind of in the suburbs a little bit in Elizabethtown. But then I had grandparents that, you know, kind of in a rural setting in a little town of New Haven. They had about 150 acres, and aunts and uncles, and spent time on the farm, and really just started to really appreciate the outdoors. Started kind of cut my teeth in squirrel hunting, you know, mm-hmm. when I was probably 12 to 13. And it kind of progressed. And honestly, we didn't have a lot of turkeys around that area back then. And so I remember my grandfather seeing turkeys and turkeys kind of moving into this area. So that was kind of neat. And then it kind of progressed to start deer hunting. And then I started turkey hunting after doing small game deer. And then I started turkey hunting. And I had two mentors, really. I had an uncle that he took me hunting and would pick me up and take me turkey hunting, take me deer hunting. And then I had a cousin that was really into it as well. So we kind of, you know, kind of built off of each other and our interest there. So it was kind of a family kind of pulling me into it. But And then my involvement with NWTF was they would drag me to drag, and not in a bad way, but I probably thought it was a bad way when I was 14, 15.
Right.
They would take me to the committee meetings for NWTF and let me be a part of the committee and the banquets and give me raffles to sell and all that stuff. So I was involved with NWTF at an early age.
Nice. And that's really cool. And I'm sure you see this a lot with like the R3 program. You know, one of the biggest hurdles people have is somebody to take them hunting. You know, they're kind of unsure how this thing works, you know, and, you know, I didn't really start hunting until I was an adult. And that was kind of part of the thing, you know, no one in my family hunted. So, you know, that was kind of something to work around. And so I'm sure that's something that you deal with those programs now, you know, just as ways to get people connected with mentors and stuff like that to get them out there.
Yeah, that's a huge point of it, you know, and it was kind of the perfect storm for me. So I mentioned my cousin, he was 4 years older than I was. And so he left for college when I was about 15. And mm-hmm. so my uncle, he was like, well, my son that just left for college, I don't have my hunting partner anymore. So I kind of was his surrogate. I kind of went in there. And so having that mentor that teaches you, kind of gives you confidence, that, you know, sets you up for success and helps you just navigate it is critical. And you're exactly right. But that's one of the barriers we're trying to work through now with this hunter retention recruitment reactivation effort and some of our individual programs at NWTF is how do we get people connected with people that will take them out and educate them and give them those experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I started deer hunting with some guys and was really blessed to have one of them, you know, kind of set me up to go turkey hunting. And he put a blind out, you know, pointed me in the right direction, you know, gave me a marker on a map and handed me two decoys and said, you know, here, put them out in front of you and work the box a little bit after daylight or about daylight. And if he comes in, you know, shoot him in the head. And, you know, it was like, you know, it was so awesome to have, you know, some nice decoys. You know, it was cool that he gave me a spot. You know, they had trail cameras and they knew turkeys walked through and all that stuff. And that just, you know, removed a huge hurdle for me to actually, you know, get on some birds. So, like you said, getting people connected with the right person to take them or at least point them in the right direction is a huge deal.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the person that I, the individual that let me hunt where I killed my first turkey was somebody I met through that NWTF chapter in Central Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So that was, I never killed a turkey. I was on a committee. I was the youngest kid there, and somebody's, I guess he felt sorry for me. I don't know. But he's like, yeah, you can come out and hunt my property. And I went out and hunted the property, and I killed a bird. And that was the first bird I'd ever harvested. I met him at the NWTF banquet.
Very cool. Very cool. And then, you know, just kind of looking back, you know, I know these days the, you know, the 20 gauge and the tungsten and everything is real big. You know, were you using a 12 gauge and did you have a choke or anything on it? Or was it just the gun, you know, when you go all the way back?
Yeah. So it was a Remington 870, mm-hmm. mag, I guess, Super Mag or Mag Express, the, you know, shot 3.5. I used the Remington extra full choke. There was no, you know, all of the other choke tubes. It was just a plain gun. And I would actually repaint it every year, a new camo. My cousin and I would do that. So that's kind of how I turkey hunt. I still actually have the gun. I don't use it anymore because it's kind of beat all up and the stock's on it's loose and everything else, but it's just kind of sitting in the gun cabinet, gun safe. And yeah, it's just a simple 870 Remington 870 and 12 gauge with an extra full Remington choke.
Very cool. Cool. Yeah, I have a Remington 887 and no choke or anything. I've got my first duck this year and I killed a nice turkey a couple years back. And
oh, nice.
I'm all for, you know, getting everything as nice as possible, but it can be done.
Yep.
Yeah, very cool. But anyway, kind of moving forward, did you end up getting you know, a degree in biology and all that stuff? Is that kind of the route you took?
That is the route I took. So I ended up going to, I grew up in Central Kentucky. I went to Murray State University. I got a degree, a wildlife biology degree, undergraduate. And then I stayed there for my master's and got a master's in biology. And then, so that's kind of how I stayed in the wildlife kind of realm. Traveled around a little bit right after school, went and worked in the West, went and worked for Arizona Game and Fish. And then I came back to the Turkey Federation. I wanted to be closer to home. I wouldn't say I was homesick, but from the South, you know, it's different than the West. And so I wanted to kind of culturally, I just felt more comfortable. And so I applied for a job with the Turkey Federation and came to work for them in 2003, 2004. And have been here ever since in multiple different roles. But right. That's kind of the pathway I took to kind of where I'm at today.
Yes, sir. That's awesome. And, you know, you mentioned being out West. That kind of brought the question to mind. I don't want to assume too much, but, you know, 18 years working at NWTF, if you've killed your grand slam, what's your favorite, you know, subspecies to hunt between the main four there?
So I will confess, I've actually only killed Easterns, Rios, and Merriams.
Okay.
So I am short on the Osceola, but I've been able to trap Easterns, Merriams, and I was able to trap Goulds. So mm-hmm. I've kind of got my hands on four of the five subspecies, but Osceolas are the ones that have eluded me so far.
That's funny because I've only killed one turkey and it wasn't Osceola. Of course, I live in
Florida. Okay.
But, yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. I've never, hunted any different, of the subspecies. So I don't really know. I've heard people talk about nuances and, you know, which is more talkative or whatever. But,
yeah, I enjoy hunting any, you know, Easterns, Rios, Merriams. Those are the three that I can compare. But, really, it's finding the spot that you like to go hunt. It's, you know, I love traveling to Nebraska. I just like the terrain and the access that I've got out there. The birds are definitely gobbling a lot more than the Easterns, mm-hmm. but they're different challenges. So, you know, I really just enjoy, you know, getting out, chasing them, and figuring the birds out is, I think, those are some of my most memorable hunts is ones that, you know, you've had to work and figure out how to get to them or what they're doing and kind of come up with a game plan.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, kind of staying on hunting for a minute. You know, when you talk to somebody who's getting into turkey hunting, do you recommend, as far as calls go, do you point them toward like something like a box call? Or even a pot call of some kind, as opposed to a mouth call? Or is there a way that you lean, like if you're talking to a new hunter? Because I'll confess, I can't do anything with a mouth call. And I've ridden down the road in my truck, and you know, I've listened to the CDs, the guys, you know, teaching calling and all that stuff. And it's like, I just hadn't picked it up yet, you know. But what do you recommend on that?
You know, probably it's a. The way that I ended up turkey calling and kind of my progression was I used a little HS strut push button box call, you know, mm-hmm. it was just a little yelper. And then I went to, you know, kind of a box call that was, you know, the paddle calls. And then I started to figure out the slates. You know, I remember I'd go to like calling seminars and some of those things and figure that out. And then it took me a while to figure out the mouth diaphragm. And so I think having a good use of all of those, I think makes you a well-rounded turkey hunter because you have some flexibilities. You know, I've hunted on really windy days and you need to be aggressive on a box call that's louder, you know, slate calls, or you can be a little quieter. And then, you know, the mouth call is something that, you know, maybe it's just a different tone. So I think eventually learning all of those is important because you learn the woodsmanship and you can play the game a little bit better or differently. But it's, if you don't or are unable to use a mouth call, it doesn't preclude you from turkey hunting. Use box calls, use slate calls, pot calls, use all of those, because you can be just as effective turkey hunting then, even with the mouth, if you can have a mouth call.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Cool. I appreciate it. Cause like I said, I'm still trying to figure it out. So I appreciate any insight I can get. But, you know, kind of shifting gears to, you know, get into conservation a little bit, having you on, you're, waist or chest deep in conservation every day of your life. So, you know, I asked Pete when I had him on the other day a little bit about turkey numbers, and, you know, kind of sounded like from what he said, numbers are good, especially if you want to look at 50 years ago, you know, when the NWTF started. Mm-hmm. But, not necessarily as high as they have been and, you know, so forth. But he said definitely to ask you about it, and just kind of – I just kind of want to get an overview of, you know, the health of the wild turkey population and just how things are looking, you know, at the moment.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You said a key word from my perspective is health. Mm-hmm. And it's the health of the turkey population. So – we can get caught up into how high the numbers were, how low the numbers were, but having a healthy population is where the conservation community and agencies and stuff want to be at. When you have a healthy population, you can maximize opportunities. When it's an unhealthy population, then you've got to figure out what's going on. So we hit a high. So to back up, when the Turkey Federation was founded in 1973, nearly 50 years ago, mm-hmm. Turkey populations in the U.S. was about 1.3 million birds estimated. We hit a high in 2004 at about 7 million, give or take a couple hundred thousand. And, right. And I'm making some round numbers here. Now we're sitting at about 6.2 million, you know, with some errors and standard deviations and confidence intervals, but we're right. Sitting at about that 6 to 6.2 million. Are we as high as we once were? No. Do we have turkeys on the landscape where we didn't have them before? Yes. But there's still some challenges we've got to figure out. Is we have seen lower reproduction in turkeys. And I'll kind of explain that. Right. We want to recruit young birds every year. And so when we have low reproduction or low recruitment, we then have a population that's not doing well. But when you have a high reproduction or high recruitment, then you've got a growing population. And right now we probably see across the turkey population, about a third of the states are seeing a stable population. Mm-hmm. About a third of the states have seen a population where the population number has declined. And then we've got the other third is probably a growing population. Mm-hmm. And so when you apply the term health, you could apply it to the growing population just as you could make sure that the population that's declining is unhealthy. Because if we have birds in places that are causing, you know, overabundant issues or nuisance birds or something along those lines, that's unhealthy.
Right.
So we need to make sure we're managing that as much as we can. Then when we have populations that are declining, that's unhealthy. So, and then we've got the stable that is healthy. So those are kind of where we're sitting today. But yeah, we've seen a decline in turkey numbers over the past 15 years of 10 to 15%. That's substantiated through surveys we, NWTF, have done with state wildlife agencies and just kind of tracking where population estimations are. But, you know, is the turkey population healthy? Yeah, it is. Is it where it was? Probably not. But we have greater challenges on a daily basis than we've ever had before. And so we need to invest in research. We need to invest in habitat management. We need to invest in, you know, getting more people access to hunt and feel comfortable hunting. We got to recruit so we can continue to fund the state wildlife agencies through license dollars. So lots of moving parts there, but yeah, I mean, it's, you hear this demise of, oh, turkeys are declining. We don't have turkeys. No, we still have a really good, strong population of turkeys, but we just got to figure out some nuances of it.
Yes, sir. No, that makes sense to me. You know, it's, not necessarily that it's not healthy, but there's still, you know, still plenty of challenges along the way. So, you know, if you don't mind, I'll ask you a personal turkey question.
Yeah.
There's a property that I get the opportunity to hunt. It's my wife's grandparents. It's only about 6 acres, but they have kind of a feral pasture between their house and the woods. And so my wife's grandfather sees, he says almost on a daily basis, he sees about 40 turkeys out there. And he said he counted 5, you know, long beards, true long beards. And then probably that many or a couple more Jakes. Okay. How does that sound, you know, like male to female and number of turkeys? Does that tell you anything, or is that just a group of turkeys?
Well, so when you look at turkey biology and kind of what they do throughout the year, so they have these winter flocks. And so, and then in spring, so when you think about the lifespan or the life cycle of a turkey in the winter, and we're starting fall, winter, they're grouped together.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those 40 turkeys, they're grouped together. They're together feeding on acorns and mass, you know, hard mass, you know, they're living on that landscape. In the spring, they start developing this pecking order, and they start breaking up. The mm-hmm. hens will start to go single off. They're going to start moving back and moving away. The younger birds will start to create bachelor groups, and you get these pods of males kind of moving around. And so that's probably a pretty good ratio, because when you start to disperse across the landscape, that 40 birds is now going to be spread out.
Yeah.
You know, and then they will congregate together and spread out. So that's a pretty healthy population. The one thing that we did know of kind of the sound bite that you shared was, what's the young of the year birds in that flock?
Mm-hmm.
And because if all of those birds are 2 years old or 1 year old, and you don't have that 6 or 7 month old, you know, Jenny in that flock, then your production or your recruitment was really low.
Okay.
So the best thing for that healthy population to be is some long beards, which are 2 year old birds. You get your Jakes, which are 1 year old birds, and I'm using that kind of loosely.
Right.
But then you have your adult hens. But then where are the young of the year hens? Are they in there, or is it all just adult hens?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've got it stratified across 2 year old birds, 1 year old males, 2 year old hens, 1 year old hens, and then you've got some young birds that were just hatched in the spring, that's a pretty healthy flock.
Right.
But if that age difference changes, that's an unhealthy flock. So you can have really good numbers. And yep. You can say, man, we got turkeys all over the place, but you're not getting a reproduction to replace these birds as they die out.
Right. I got you. And the best way to tell that is, you know, if I'm looking at the flock, are they just going to be a little smaller hen, or is there actually, or that's just,
you know, you can probably tell a little bit, you know, the easiest thing is that once those birds kind of get into that, you know, 6 to 7 month old time frame, they're going to look real similar. It takes a really good trained eye to be able to say that. Because, and the reason I say that is during the summer, so you back up a little further, mm-hmm. most state agencies or a lot of state agencies will do what they call brood counts. And they will record how many adult hens they saw, how many young turkeys that they saw, see. And then they also try to estimate their age, because in that estimating the age of that poult, they can then figure out when that bird was hatched, when that bird was initiated the nest, and then when that bird was bred. So you can then, so once they get into the November, December, January, it's really hard to tell them unless you have them in your hand.
I gotcha. I gotcha. That makes sense. But I appreciate what you said there about, you know, that seems like a good flock, but of course they're going to start sectioning off. And, you know, I've been out there in the spring trying to get one, and I don't see a big group of 40 walking out in front of me. So.
No. And so. A wild turkey on average uses about 2,000 acres.
Wow.
On average for their home range for a year. And to give you that, that's a, It's about 3 square miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty wide range.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Now, one thing, you know, that we kind of dipped our toe into, you know, when I was talking to Pete last week was, you know, what hunters can do to chip in when it comes to conservation. And, you know, what we talked about was kind of like step one is join the NWTF. You know, it's $35. You know, that's one of the absolute best things you can do if you call yourself a hunter or turkey hunter, anything like that. You know, that's one of the best things you can do to contribute. But, you know, whether it's in the field or, you know, if you want to get into anything with banquets or chapters or whatever, you know, what's kind of the way that we can move forward as we try to help with the, you know, the conservation of the wild turkeys?
Yeah, so I think joining a NWTF, I think, is a great first step. And the reason I say that is, you know, the ability and some of hopefully the credibility we have with what we are doing on the landscape. You know, Florida is a great example that we have a program. It's a cost share program where we take funding that's raised within the state and we match that with state and federal dollars to make sure we're doing habitat management on public lands in the, across the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. To the tune of a 20 to 1 match. So for every dollar we raise in Florida that we can allocate to that program, we can return it with 20 more dollars. And that way we can leverage that. We help administer that program. So supporting NWTF is great. It's a membership. It gives us a voice, but it also gives us financial resources to unlock state or private dollars to can do habitat work. The next step is support your state wildlife agencies. You know, we have, and we need to continue to make sure they have the public support for them to conduct the necessary wildlife management and habitat management necessary for the public trust of wildlife. And we have to support them. We need to make sure they have the ability to make decisions that's on the best behalf of the game or non-game species. They're professionals, they're trained, they're doing it. So we need to support their ability to do that. And then I think third is take somebody hunting. Mm. You know, be that mentor. Give up some time that you've got and be a mentor for somebody to get them involved. Because as hunters are aging out and we're not replacing them quick enough, and with the population increase in the United States and the rate in which we are losing hunters, we're not only we're losing ground in what is our influence. And so we need to, you know, you've heard this analogy before, maybe you haven't, is that if every hunter took another person that never hunted, we would double our numbers. Well, right. We need to do that. We need people hunting. We need people on that landscape. It's a healthy lifestyle. It's sourcing, you know, local protein. It's, you know, it's there's a connectivity to it. So I think it's threefold. I think it's, and you could change your order of them, but I think being all three of those of joining an NWTF like organization like us, giving us resources to leverage funds, supporting the state wildlife agencies, and then also recruiting somebody of your own and becoming a mentor on your own to do that. Those are the three critical steps the way that I see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of just making sure that we realize it's important as hunters, you know, not just getting the mindset of like, I just like killing turkeys. It's like, that's good. That's cool and all, but we have to do something to continue it, to keep it going. You know, and we can't make it say it's not our problem because, you know, for our kids and our grandkids or whoever, you know, it will be their problem. So it makes a big difference to get involved in those three ways if you can.
Yep, exactly. And it doesn't take much, you know.
Right.
$35 membership, supporting your state wildlife agencies. And this is going to sound really odd, But staying active as a purchasing of your hunting license.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody hunts on consecutive years, right? Mm-hmm. But set a reminder that when your hunting license, you know, expires, buy your next one. Go ahead and buy it. You know,
yeah.
Because those license dollars, those fund, say wildlife agencies, they unlock Pittman Robertson dollars, which are proceeds from excise taxes on sporting goods that are then allocated back to state wildlife agencies based on the number of hunting licenses they have and purchases they have within a state. So dropping out of the fold and dropping out of the awareness of, you know, just not buying your license is a negative to the state wildlife agencies. So be consistent with purchasing your license. And I would say that's consistent with NWTF membership. Be consistent with that. That allows us to have a voice and can influence legislation, conservation policy, government affairs, and we can have a voice, and it makes us more efficient in delivering the mission of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, from my own personal experience, probably in most states, I think I know for sure here in the state of Florida, you can set your hunting license to auto renew. So, you know, that.
Yeah. That's if that's an option in your state, man, that would be great.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure most states, you know, have that or will soon. So, you know, that's a big one. And then, you know, just kind of hitting on the membership one more time. You know, I don't work for the NWTF. I've never even been to a banquet, to be completely honest, but you know, I am a member, and it's, you know, it's $35 a year. You know, I'm not likely in my current state. We were talking before we started recording, you know, I've got two young kids and I'm involved at a church. So, you know, there's a big charitable giving for me and all that, but, you know, $35 a year is a way to be involved. And you mentioned earlier how that money can be multiplied, through some of the programs that are, you know, so even if you're like me and you're not going to be able to, you know, donate thousands of dollars or something like that to programs and to organizations, you can still chip in and do your part. And it does add up and it does make a difference. So it's a big deal.
Yep. No, I totally agree. You know, it doesn't take much. We're supported by a tremendous network of volunteers, a tremendous network of members, partners, and having continuity so we can stay in touch with everybody and we can share what's going on. Because when that membership lapses, we lose touch and then we've got to re-engage. And so it is that auto renewal or that habit to make sure that you stay current will maximize your benefit because we're not dropping in and dropping out.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Man, well, Mark, I appreciate you joining me today and just the knowledge that you've imparted to me. You know, I'm not a biologist and I don't know how all this stuff works, but I feel like I've kind of learned more about how everything works. Now the NWTF convention starts tomorrow. You know, is there anything kind of in closing, anything you want to mention about the convention or, you know, message you might want to get out to somebody who's going to be able to make it, anything like that, that you want to close us out with, man. I appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, man. Appreciate that opportunity. First of all, I just want to thank everybody that is planning to come to convention. We're excited to be back in Nashville. We're expecting a huge, huge show. We've got seminars for hunting. We've got conservation seminars with state, private, federal agencies. We've got volunteer seminars, members. We've got a sports show with over 400 vendors going to be packed into Gaylord Opryland Hotel, events on the, you know, morning lunch and dinner. And so if you're in the area, I encourage you to come out. You know, if you've never experienced it, it is an experience. A lot of just great, great opportunities here. And one thing I'm proud of is just, I want to thank all the volunteers and members and partners, you know, that have made their time. I mean, we have over 3,000 registered attendees so far for our convention. And so we're excited to be back. We're excited to be back to this big family reunion. And man, we encourage everybody to come out and check it out. We, you know, love to see you. And if you're able to make it, great. If not, you know, make plans for it next year. It's an event to come see.
Absolutely, Mark. I appreciate it, brother.
All right, man. I appreciate this. Take care of yourself, and hopefully you have good luck in the spring this year in Florida.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And good luck to you as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much to all of you who have been listening to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. I really appreciate you taking time to listen and support. Thank you so much to those who have subscribed and left reviews on iTunes. Couldn't thank you enough for that. For those who are looking for other ways to support, the best way to do that is check out our link tree on Instagram, and you'll see some opportunities to pick up some t-shirts. We have a One Track Mind t-shirt for spring 22 for turkey season. I got some turkey tracks on there that I hand drew, so I'm sure you'll be super impressed with that. Not really, but it's a cool shirt. And then we had a listener design one that says Established by God, Genesis 9:3. Got a really cool design on that one, so you'll like that as well. Those always help. We also have links to Patreon if you want to do monthly support, things like that. So we appreciate all the support, especially those who listen each and every episode and those who follow along on Instagram. That's the biggest way to support, and we appreciate it. Thank you once again so much to Mark Hatfield for joining me today. Unbelievable to have someone, you know, literally the executive team of the NWTF, take a couple minutes to talk to me about turkey hunting and wild turkey population. So that was super informative, and what a nice guy. So we appreciate that so much. Thank you to him. Thank you to the NWTF. Thank you to Pete Muller for really putting the connection together there. And I hope everybody is getting fired up for turkey season. I know we are down here in Florida. It's coming quick, especially in the south. But, you know, North Zone where I am isn't too far behind. So let's stay tuned up and just keep following along. We've got some awesome guests coming on the turkey series. Can't say anything quite yet, but it's going to be exciting. So appreciate y'all listening today. Hope everyone has a good day. As always, honor God, work hard, and keep hunting. Thank you.